Hello and welcome back to the channel. I'm Uncle Bonehead. You probably knew that because you clicked on the video on my channel that's titled Uncle Bonehead. I don't know why we all say that. It makes no sense. But anyways, I digress. This is why I love the Open Mandriva community. Yes, their forum is busy. It's not, you know, totally hopping all the time, but they, you know, the forum is basically there mostly for support and stuff. But where the real action happens is in the Matrix chat. The conversation today, on any typical day, really, it runs the gambit on what people will talk about. Today, I was on, off and on all day. It went from piracy, arguments against and for piracy, whether it's software or digital products such as videos and music and PDFs. And it went from there to software licensing and digital product licensing. And then it evolved into the intelligence level of today's modern world compared to the ancient world. And it went, you know, it went back and forth all day long. And I will never leave this community. This is the most entertaining community I've ever been in. But that's not what this video is about. This video is about, it sparked a thought in my brain about software licensing. And, you know, I'm not a quote unquote big pirater. I don't pirate stuff unless I absolutely have to. The problem is licensing. I totally get what it's for, but it's artificial. It's fake. It's artificial restrictions placed onto a digital product that's not tangible. You can't put it in your hand and carry it. You can't stick an MP3 in your pocket. You can't stick an MP4 in your pocket. You can't stick a PDF in your pocket. You can stick it on a thumb drive and stick it in your pocket, or on your phone and stick it in your pocket. But that's the thumb drive or a phone that is a tangible product. The stuff that's on it is ones and zeros. So the licensing is the issue. So here's 10 reasons why licensing is dumb. You don't really own it. That's correct. When you purchase a movie file or a digital download, you're not buying the file. You're buying the license, which gives you permission to watch it. So you don't own that file. It's like paying full price for a car, but you only get a lease with a million restrictions on it. That is an actual example that we were talking about in the chat in Matrix today. Somebody brought up a car. So they said it's piracy if you download a car, if it was possible to download a car. No, it's not. You didn't steal a car. The original car is still there. You downloaded a copy of that car. So nobody's out of a car. That's the problem. When you download a video file of a movie, you're just downloading a copy of it. The original is still there. the restrictions on use for licenses often dictate how, where, and on what devices you can use the product, and even what platforms, such as Google Play, Google TV, YouTube, Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, all of it. You can only watch it on that platform, or you can only consume it on that platform. And they will restrict you from watching it further if they wish. If there is a licensing from a movie studio that changes in the future, you lose what you paid for. You don't own it. Forced updates. Some licenses tie you to mandatory updates or subscriptions. You might like the version you bought, but nope, you got to pay for an upgrade or lose functionality. There's no resale value. You cannot give your copy to your significant other or your son or your daughter. You can't resell it. You can't, you buy Photoshop, then you don't want to use it no more. You can't sell it to somebody else. It's all under, all licenses are under a corporate control. Licenses give companies creepy levels of power over your stuff. They remotely disable your software, track your usage. Feels more like spyware than a product. There's several, it's been several years ago now, but there was one morning people woke up and everybody that had iTunes found a new album in their library that they didn't buy and they didn't want. It was given to them and forced upon them by Apple, because some recording studio thought that, you know, they should pay Apple to give away their album. And it really pissed a lot of people off. Region locks. Licensing can restrict where you're allowed to use it. Move to another country? Sorry, your software is not going to work. You know, it's dumb. Over complicated terms. Have you ever read a license agreement? They're bad. They're really dry reads, and you got to be a lawyer to understand them. So everybody just, you know, scrolls to the bottom, clicks, read the terms, and they never actually comprehend what you're agreeing to. You get punished if you modify the software to suit your needs. The planned obsolescence. This is everywhere, all the time. Like, for instance, you know, Reaper. I like Reaper. I like using Reaper. It is a great tool. And I'm watching my cat. She's looking like she's going to jump on my coffee maker, coffee machine. No. She changed her mind. The Reaper is a great tool. But when you buy a license for it, you're only buying it for that one specific version. And if you want to upgrade, like, to Reaper 7, you got to buy a new license. I hold a license for Reaper 6. Am I going to buy 7? No. It's good. And yeah, I like the software, but no. The thing is, licensing is there to protect companies, not the users, not their customers, the people that buy their software. They're there to protect the company. And it's, you know, digital products are supposed to be the ultimate in freedom for what you can do with them. And licensing prevents that because they lose their control and their power. So anyways, the moral alternatives, these are five things that are already, people are already doing. And they work. Pay once ownership model. Users pay a fair one-time price for a perpetual license to the software or digital product. No expiration, no subscriptions. Developers set the price to reflect their effort and ongoing support costs. You own it outright like a physical book or tool with no strings attached. Updates could be optional purchases, keeping the base product functional forever. That's the, to me, that's the best alternative to licensing. If you want to update in the future, you can update outside of security updates. Like they build in more features. Yeah, that would be a great optional update purchase at a later time. But as long as the base product is what you got and what you need and it just works, why force an update, paid update? Crowdfunding development. Creators pitch their product to the public. Users fund it up front through contributions. Once the goal is met, the finished product is released freely to all backers and sometimes the public under an open model. Developers get paid directly for their labor and users get unrestricted access without ongoing licensing nonsense. This is in practice in several pieces of software. One of them is I know for sure right off the top of my head, is called System Sculpt. It is a plugin for Obsidian that ties in a virtual shit ton of AI functionality into Obsidian. And it is absolutely amazing what he does. And it's all through Patreon. People subscribe to him, support him on Patreon. They get the plugin, full access to the plugin, you know, through it. There are other software, I can't think of them off the top of my head, but they are using Patreon to, you know, fund it and develop it, and they're doing quite well with it. Community supported open source. This is already in practice. The software is fully open source, free to use, modify and share. Developers are sustained by donations, grants, or pay what you can model from the community. We've been doing that for how long has Linux and open source been around? Come on. And then finally, service-backed purchase. You buy the software once and it's yours to use indefinitely, but developers offer optional paid services like cloud storage, premium support, or custom features to generate steady income. The base product isn't crippled or licensed away, and the extras are just a bonus for those who want them. That's similar to the pay once ownership model, but this is like, you know, you get paid extras, which is very cool and very ethical. Now, there are things called fair trade goods. This is like a transparent pricing thing. Creators openly break down costs, development time, tool support, so users know exactly what they're paying for. For example, a game dev might say $30 covers 500 hours of coding, and art users pay once, get the product forever, no hidden license fees. A guaranteed creator compensation, which is a fair trade label, could certify that developers receive a living wage up front, not just scraps from subscriptions or royalties. Think of a co-op model. Team builds an app, splits the sales evenly, and users buy it knowing the money goes directly to support the makers. Now, these fair trade goods is kind of based on like having a board or a platform that certifies that these are fair trade type goods, products, and services. Unrestricted user rights. Once purchased, the digital good is yours. No DRM or licenses locking it to one device. Imagine downloading an ebook and being able to read it anywhere forever, like a paperback, with creators still paid fairly at the point of sale. Community accountability. A fair trade digital marketplace could let users and creators vote on what projects get funded, ensuring ethical practices. For instance, a music album gets crowdfunded, the artist sets a fair price, and buyers get DRM-free tracks. Everyone sees where the money goes. Unlike if you go purchase something at Spotify, where Spotify gets 90% and the artist gets 5% and the record label gets the other 5%. sustainable support options. Instead of forced updates or subscriptions, creators offer optional ways to keep the lights on, like donations or paid add-ons. While the core product remains fully functional, picture or video editors sold for $50 with an optional $10 a year for new filters, all voluntary. This could work in practice with a platform certifying fair trade digital goods. For example, a photo editing tool is sold for $40. Users get lifetime access. The developer team earns a decent cut, say $30 after platform fees, and there's no licensing, no nonsense. Or a musician releases an album for $10 with clear info, this pays for studio time and my rent. Users feel good knowing their money supports real people, not corporate gatekeepers. It's a shift from control to trust. Creators thrive. Users aren't shackled, and the digital world feels less like a rigged game. Wow, I cannot spell. An ethical digital marketplace. Building on the fair trade digital goods idea, let's flesh out the concept of an ethical digital marketplace. Platforms where creators are fairly paid. Users get genuine value, and the whole system prioritizes integrity over exploitation. These marketplaces would be the practical backbone for distributing digital products, software, music, art, ebooks, in a way that ditches other licensing headaches and respects everyone involved. Here's what they could look like with five core features and some real-world flavor. First, a creator-first revenue sharing. The platform takes a minimal cut, say 5 to 10%. The rest goes straight to the creators, unlike the 30% or more gouged by some app stores. Looking at you, Google. For example, a developer sells a $20 app. They pocket $18 to $19, enough to live on, but the platform covers hosting and payment processing. Transparency shows users exactly where their money goes. No DRM or licensing locks. Everything sold is yours to keep and move freely. No digital handcuffs. Buy a digital album, download the MP3s or FLAX, and pay them anywhere. Get a game, install it on any device you own. Creators are paid up front, so they don't need to cling to control through restrictive licenses. Iced tea is awesome. Community-driven curation. Instead of algorithms pushing whatever's trending, users and creators rate and review products based on quality and ethics. Think of a marketplace where a $15 ebook gets spotlighted because its author paid contributors fairly, not because it's backed by a big publisher. It's meritocracy over marketing. Flexible payment models. Ethical marketplaces could support one-time purchases, pay what you want, or voluntary patronage, letting users choose how to support creators without coercion. Imagine a video editing tool, $30 to own it forever, or $5 a month to fund updates. Both options clear and optional, no forced subscriptions, just trust and value. sustainability, and accountability. Platforms commit to ethical operations, openly auditing creator payouts, ensuring no shady middlemen, and even supporting open source projects. Picture a marketplace that donates 1% of sales to fund free tools for students, with creators opting in because it aligns with their values. I know this platform that I'm talking about actually exists out there, but they're not popular. And I'll get to that in a minute. But it's not about, you know, is there people out there that's going to pirate stuff? Yes, just because they can. Yes, there is. That will always be there. There is no getting around that. Restricting everybody because of a handful of few people that just want free shit, that's not the right thing to do. It's one thing to pirate something because it was your way to fight back the man, or whatever you want to say. It's another thing to get it just because you want to shit free. There's nothing wrong with a creator, a developer, getting paid for what they do. The problem is the licensing. Because these digital goods, software included, are not tangible products. You cannot hold them in your hand. They are not real. They are fake. They are made out of ones and zeros. Yes, it took somebody effort and labor to make them and to create them. But we are looking at a time where AI is taking even that away. And you can get something made for you and created for you by an AI for free without another person creating it for you. So there's no labor involved. AI is not alive. It does not live. It does not think. It does not have a conscience. It's not even real. So it's fake creating fake. Ones and zeros creating ones and zeros. So you're just going to be, I guess, creating the cycle of free for free. The problem, what I'm trying to get to, is sometimes piracy is justified. Like, for instance, you pay for the, you know, 4K video on Netflix or YouTube or whatever, and it's artificially compressed down to 1080 for absolutely no reason. And it's just dumb. So anyways, how this thing could work. Picture a platform like Ethymarket, just, you know, made up word. A musician uploads an album for $10, 90% goes to them, and buyers get high quality files with no DRM. Coder sells a productivity app for $25. They keep $22.50, and users download a fully unlocked version. Writer offers an ebook with a pay what you can option, averaging $8 per sale, and still earns a living because the platform's low fees Don't bleed them dry. Reviews highlight ethical practices like fair wages for collaborators, building trust. Why is better? Unlike today's giants, think App Store or Amazon or Google, ethical marketplaces wouldn't trap creators in exploitative real royalty schemes or users and licensing mazes. They'd prove you can pay people well without treating buyers like tenants. It's a win-win. Creators get a living wage, users get freedom, and the platform sustains itself modestly. I know I keep saying community. Change sticks better when it starts small, gains traction, and scales up. Rather than try to topple the big players in one national or digital sweep, let's break down why this could work and how it might play out. Why localized communities could shift the tide. Trust and tangibility. People are more likely to buy into a system they can see and touch, literally or figuratively. A local community of creators and users may be centered around a city or niche interest like indie game devs in Portland or musicians in Austin, Texas. Builds trust through familiarity. You're not pitching an abstract ethical marketplace to millions. You're showing your neighbor how a $10 app sale paid a coder down the street. It's real. It's not theoretical. 2, proving the model works. Small wins demonstrate viability. If a local marketplace, say 50 creators and 500 users, thrives without DRM, pays people fairly, and delivers great products, it's a blueprint others can copy. Like a city council win showing a party can govern, a successful local digital co-op proves ethical markets aren't just hippie dreams. Word spreads, and soon you've got 10 towns doing it, then 100. Now, how could this look? Just picture this. Start tiny. A handful of developers, artists, and writers in a region, say a county or online fandom, form a mini marketplace. They sell direct. $20 apps, $5 albums, $10 ebooks. No licensing, no middlemen. They just use a simple platform, maybe a co-op site with a 5% fee, and promote it at local meetups, forums, or farmers markets. Step 2, build loyalty users. Users join because they know the creators. Think, I bought this game from Sarah at the office, or Sarah at the coffee shop, and this ebook funded my buddy's rent. The lack of DRM feels like a perk, not a risk. Because the community's tight-knit, creators share revenue splits publicly so buyers feel good about every dollar. Step 3, scale horizontally. Once it works, nearby communities replicate it. A local digital fair trade network emerges, each node independent but linked by shared principles. One group might focus on software, another on art. They swap tips, not mandates, growing organically like political precincts flipping one by one. Why it beats a big bang approach. Going national or global right away means battling mega corporations head on. They are not your friends. They would buy you out. Google is famous for this. Buy you out and then throw it away just to get it out of the way. It's they got deep pockets and even deeper influence. Think of it like an election. You don't win the presidency without first securing city halls and state houses. Small communities can fly under the radar, the perfect model, and build a base of believers. By the time the big players notice, you've got a coalition too rooted to squash. It's already kind of happening. Look at Bandcamp for music. It's not fully DRM free or licensing free across the board, but it's a platform where artists set terms, keep most of the cash, and connect directly with fans, often locally at first. or consider indie game jams, where devs sell straight to players on itch.io, skipping the Steam tax. These are seeds. A fair trade certification or local co-op could supercharge them. The ripple effect. If a dozen towns or online niches pull this off, say each with $50,000 in annual sales, that's $600,000 flowing to creators without corporate skimming. Users get hooked on the freedom of no DRM, and creators see they don't need licensing to survive. It's not utopia overnight, but it's momentum. Like local elections tipping a state, these pockets could pressure bigger markets to adapt or lose relevance. Well, I've been talking for almost 30 minutes. This is what I mean when I'm talking about licensing is the problem. When it comes to licensing, they want the reason why they don't want to give up the licensing is because the big mega corporations lose control. Not just the money. They want to control the market. They don't want a true free market, because a true free market makes them irrelevant. I did make a point that I wanted to cover that was in the Matrix track earlier. I pointed out that, I forget how I worded it. Must not be that important. I can't remember what it was. Yeah. So if we can get rid of the licensing, now don't get me started. Open source ain't the answer. It's open source is a great step, but the problem with open source is there is not one definition of open source that goes for everything. I know there's the OSI, Open Source Initiative, but they are not the end-all be-all of open source licensing. They are actually an irrelevant group. They are self-appointed, and they think that they are the ones that say yay or nay on what open source is, and they are not. There is no legal bounds for them, I guess you could say. I guess I can't think of how to word it. They are self-righteous people that want to feel like they're important and they're irrelevant, because they are not the ones that choose the licensing of the apps. They don't dictate the terms. The creators do. And if you want true freedom, you can't have a license. I'm sorry. That's not true freedom for digital products. I keep saying digital products are not real products. They're not. They're not something you can hold in your hand. You can't walk around with them in your pocket. Just the same as cryptocurrency is not real. It's not real money. It's not real currency. You can't put it in your pocket. You can't hold it in your hand. Which, by the way, I do have a Monero wallet address. If you would like to donate some of your your fake money, I'll accept your Monero. It's not that I can touch it or see it. Hey, if I can use it to help buy some fake products, and that's totally fine. I'll do that. So, I'm not going to beat a horse, you know, beat a dead horse into the ground here. That's really the best way to do it, is to just open up the market, start a fair goods marketplace, an ethical digital marketplace, and do lots of little local ones all across the world. And eventually, if they, you know, if we can make them catch on, we can hit them where it hurts. I'm going to do a video next Friday. I don't know if it's going to be a live stream or not, but it's going to be a Byte Rebel listening party. Byte Rebel first album drops next Friday. Goes on, well, it's on sale now. Pre-sale on Spotify. I think it's got 8 or 9 songs on it. And it releases next Friday, so I'm going to do a listening party stream for it. The same day Mirror Nocturnes first album goes on sale, pre-sale, and it releases the following Friday from that. I gotta go to Meatbag Friday next Friday, so I'm not gonna do a live stream. I'll record it and then drop it on that Friday. After that, I am almost done with the second Byte Rebel album. I just got the artwork to do. I finished the music for it. There is 9 songs, and it is called Simulation Hypothesis, and it is a trip into the dystopian future that the World Economic Forum wants for everybody. And is industrial, it's rap, it's metal, and it's in your face. It's got some of the most editing and most produced stuff I've done with any Byte Rebel or Mirror Nocturne music thus far. I've added a lot to the songs, to what Suno spit out. I added a lot of sound effects, a lot of extra instruments and noise effects. Code Red is one of the songs. I played it in the last video. I'm proud of that song. There's a couple other songs that I'm very proud of. So we'll see how it goes and whether or not people actually like it. Don't forget to like and subscribe. We'll catch you guys again next time. Be good, be safe. Never ever stick your finger where you wouldn't stick your face.